Okay, well, friends, I had a little bit of a mishap here, disorienting me. Suddenly I got that blue screen. And fortunately, I had another computer on, and that may allow me to join the webinar here once again, although I cannot be sure. So perhaps this is a continuation of what I was discussing, and perhaps this is something entirely new. Hopefully, I did not lose what I had been discussing with you. We're talking about the energies of the various signs, and we talked about the solar signs surrounding the sun and how the planets might be attracting those, and I showed you a diagram, which is sort of the Dorje diagram. Let's see if it's still there. No, it isn't. So I'm going to try to pull that back in as best I can in just a moment. So this was the diagram, and it demonstrated that there is not necessarily a direct connection between the lords of a planet and the lords of the constellations, but must pass rather through the sun first. And the sun may have its own series of auric signs which the planets are magnetically connected to. And so this may indeed be the way in which we reach these constellational energies reach the planets, including our own. Okay. So the energies of the various signs are attracted by the different planets according to their stage of development and by what is esoterically called ancient relationship. Well, we are developing ancient relationships, or relationships which will one day be ancient, between lesser lives and ourselves, even as greater lives than we are have ancient relationships with us and our uplifting teachers, we can say. Okay, so ancient relationships between all manner of beings in cosmos. I suppose on a lesser scale we have fairly ancient relationships with our master and teacher, Master DK, although perhaps there's a closer distance between such a master and ourselves than there would be between a lord of a constellation and a lord of a planetary scheme. The proportion is not the same, yet the relationships are ancient. So there is an ancient relationship between the informing entities of the planets and of the constellations. Notice how he began this sentence by talking about signs. He often does this, and ends with talking about constellations. He uses them interchangeably. The energy, I think, is the same. It's just a question of the intensity, the relative intensity of the energy. So this relation exists between beings and is founded on a law of affinity. So we could say that the lord of the constellation Mars has affinity with the lord of the constellations Aries and Scorpio and Sagittarius. The lord of Venus has some kind of affinity with the lords of Taurus, of Libra, of Gemini, of Capricorn, and so forth. What these affinities are, they may be ray affinities. It's difficult for us to know exactly. But affinities there are all throughout cosmos, and different types of beings are related according to numerical affinity, ray affinity, and in general what we would call astrological affinity. Infinity, or what did I say? Affinity. Affinity. I'm so used to that word infinity that It just creeps in. It is this law of affinity which produces the magnetic pull and the dynamic response between constellations and planets within the solar system. Notice he's not talking about signs here, he's talking about constellations. So there is magnetic pull between constellations and planets within the solar system, and between some particular planet and the forms of life on another planet. So we have on our planet certain forms of life which are basically earthly forms, but they have a particular affinity, say, with the lord of the constellation Mars, or Mercury, or Venus, or any of the other planets. So we have Earth sub-Martian forms, Earth sub-Venus, Earth sub-Jupiterian, Earth sub-Saturnian forms on our planet, which have an affinity with the more original source, the lord of the particular planet, which is subsidiary to the general Earth rulership when it comes to assessing or understanding the form of that particular form. So, just as there are magnetic poles and dynamic responses between constellations and planets within the solar system, there are between some particular planet and the forms of life upon another planet. And the impending energies, as they are called, which are being received from some major source. So there's kind of a threefold line here that is being described. A kind of a constellational source, which will pass through various types of signs, maybe solar signs. So three major entities are involved here. Constellational source, the lord of a planet, and forms on different planets attuned to certain lords of planets. And in all of this process, the signs as concentrated influences do play their role. How to work out what that role may be still has to be worked out. But if there is a kind of a 12-fold magnetic aura surrounding the sun, each of which is a sign attuned to a certain constellation, then the various planets may attune to that 12-fold aura as they receive the energies which originally came from the constellations, but which the chart on page 610 seems to demonstrate do not reach the lords of planets directly from the constellations. The capacity to receive and to profit by planetary energies themselves received as emanated from some constellation is dependent upon the point in evolution which determines the receptivity and the responsiveness of the mechanism of reception. So he's saying quite a bold thing here that planetary energies, G-T-Y, energies have their origin in constellations. And then depending upon the form in any particular planet or on any particular planet, so will be the capacity to receive such planetary energies which originally, it seems, emanated from some constellation. It's almost as if the energies of every lesser entity are somehow dependent upon energies emanated from a still greater entity, and ultimately, if you take that idea far enough, all energies with which we are dealing in our various lesser centers and sources are dependent upon the one and only universal logos of this particular cosmos, this particular universe. So the capacity to receive and profit by planetary energies themselves received as emanated from some constellation, even though having to pass, I suppose, through the sun, that's how it looks, is dependent upon the point in evolution. So when we're thinking about ourselves and how we can profit and benefit by planetary energies, we have to think about the condition of our form and our affinity with certain planets and our ability to tap in on a range of energies emanating from that planet. We can tap in on lesser or greater energies emanating from a particular planet depending upon the quality of our form. So this is all an inducement towards purification, I think. This constitutes an unalterable law and accounts for the power of certain planets which may have hitherto remained undiscovered and which have therefore had little to do with evolution up to the present, owing to the unresponsiveness of the forms of reception. Well, we might say that discovery of a planet certain forms, such as man, indicate the readiness of those of those forms to respond to the planet. In one way, that's true. I mean, at least the readiness of large numbers of people. Now, there has been, I think, always a response to Vulcan. The will, the spiritual will, and the fact that he has a place in the pantheon of gods shows that his energy has been present. But in terms of a large number of human beings responding to what Vulcan really means, perhaps that is more a condition which is emerging in the modern times. I suppose Uranus is the great heavenly one, a secret deity of which the masses were unaware, but the initiates were. I suppose that there have always been human beings who could respond to Uranus, but never in large numbers, perhaps, until the discovery of revolutionary Uranus at the time that people were ready to throw off the limitations of the kind of kingship which was practiced in the 18th century and earlier. And thus it goes for Neptune and for Pluto. Always there have been those who have responded to these planetary sources. But in large numbers, I think the discovery indicated the readiness of humanity to respond. So there are even now undiscovered planets. Even now they exist, of course, because we're told there are some 115 plus planets. Even now the undiscovered planets exist. And these undiscovered planets have their effect on some, but probably not on so many. Later, when these planets are discovered, and we go back in history and we see how certain people behaved, we may see that they were in fact responding to those planets, the energies of those planets. But when the discovery comes, this is the theory at least, that there will be a readiness for more people to respond to them, because somehow the planet and its meaning has entered the field of a larger scope of human consciousness. There's kind of a timing in this which needs to be tested out, but I think it is probably correct. The Uranian, Neptunian, and Plutonian behavioral tendencies have only been seen on a wide scale recently. though individuals, of course, have been able to respond in that manner. Such as, for instance, certain mystics of the Catholic Church, I think definitely responding to Neptune and to the sixth ray well before the planet was discovered. The planets, the energies and forces have existed all the time, says D.K., but have remained ineffective. And because they are ineffective on a large scale, they've remained undiscovered. Ineffective and consequently undiscovered, owing to the non-existence of the needed instruments of response, though those with the needed instruments of response, Initius, let us say, have known of them and have, so to speak, discovered them. Long ago, they were discovered by those who truly knew, and when one becomes a knower, one enters the company of those who have discovered such planets. So even now, let us say, some of us are quite aware of what Vulcan means, especially in its more spiritual aspects, and we are utilizing that type of energy spiritually. Most human beings are not, and Vulcan is not discovered. Yet it has been somewhat effective in terms of the mineral kingdom and the use of the mineral kingdom in a willful way during war. People are unconscious that it is Vulcan behind this. The really spiritual meaning of Vulcan, stimulating the spiritual will and allowing men to stand steadfast in expression of and defense of that will, that has not yet come. Humanity is not yet standing steadfastly for the divine plan and for as much of the purpose as they can fathom. But it is on its way. Perhaps that is the next imminent discovery. So the planets, the energies and forces have existed all the time but have remained ineffective. I want to say here, you know, to be more precise if I can be, on a large scale, and consequently undiscovered, owing to the non-existence of the needed instruments of response. So what he's really saying, it seems to me, is that when the needed instruments of response to the planet's power exist, discovery will follow. So there has been perhaps an evolution of the development of such instruments, perhaps even influenced by the rays of the undiscovered planet. And when a certain critical threshold is reached in those forms, the discovery of the planet will occur. So we have to build up spiritual will in humanity before there will be a discovery of Vulcan. We're going to need Vulcan used in a conscious manner quite soon. Unconscious use, I suppose, has always existed. Conscious use by disciples who really know the spiritual meaning of the undiscovered planets has been much more rare. They will, therefore, these undiscovered planets have no effect upon the life and history of an individual, and only become potent and magnetically informing when a man has reached a certain point of development. Only become potent and magnetically informing when a man has reached a certain point of development and is becoming sensitive to higher influences and is in preparation for the treading of the path. So, discovery, in an individual sense, occurs only when the path is becoming a possibility. Or should we say, only when the treading of the path is becoming a possibility. So I think many people are quite opaque to the higher meanings of even recently discovered planets, they have somehow not discovered them within their own nature. And there are many more planets which are having, I suppose, an unconscious effect, but which are not spiritually active in the insensitive individual, who is still progressing around the wheel clockwise, is still a personality with a materially oriented consciousness. Such people, I think, respond often to the non-sacred planets more readily, and to the sacred planets only in part. What DK is saying here is really important. You know, sometimes he brings in general discussions in the middle of a chapter, supposedly on another subject. But we have to be ready for that, because he's always teaching at an appropriate point. Okay. I'm checking my other computer here, because it's supposed to be the means of rescuing these programs if something goes wrong. Well, it didn't quite pull it off last time, because the work that was done did not necessarily save. We'll have to see whether it did, in some respect, save when there was such a truncation. Otherwise, I'll have to do it all over again, which I would be loath to do, because you can never quite recapture what you said. And it may be inferior or superior. Okay, so they will, therefore, these undiscovered planets have no effect upon the life and history of an individual, and only become potent and magnetically informing. Their quality will begin to inform his life and become part of the quality of his life. When a man has reached a certain point of development and is becoming sensitive to the higher influences and is in preparation for the treading of the path. DK has said something about Pluto. It's never really consciously utilized except in the lives of those who are treading the path of becoming disciples. And I suppose this is so even if the planet is discovered. I suppose sufficient numbers of human beings who are sensitive enough to the quality of the planet, when a sufficient number exists, then the discovery occurs, but it doesn't necessarily mean that all human beings will be sensitive to that planet. So probably we could go through our horoscope and we could wonder the degree to which we are particularly sensitive to the emanation of particular planets, non-sacred, sacred, and also undiscovered. Humanity cannot assimilate too much, too rapidly. It would be dangerous, overwhelm would occur. We have to assimilate what we can in some kind of sequential order, and therefore be ready to assimilate more. Eventually, all that can be emanated from the planets in our solar system, and there are so many of these planets, will be assimilated by the human being and well used, but not too much too fast. In that sense, the wise use of slow action under the second ray gives us the course of safety. So this readiness indicates that his response apparatus, the threefold personality, is more sensitive than is the case of the average person, and can respond to a higher range of vibrations than would otherwise be possible. You might even ask, you know, what about the... What about what's called the unveiled Neptune? DK talks about the danger of responding to the unveiled Neptune, the possible overwhelming effect of doing that. along the line of planetary possibility, there's a whole range of differentiated responses. The idea behind this is that humanity in general is fortunate that Neptune is often veiled by the moon. It is, in a way, in Cancer. It is, we know, esoterically in Virgo. And if it were unveiled, too much might come into the response apparatus ill-prepared to handle it. So, this readiness to respond indicates that his response apparatus is more sensitive than is the case with the average person, and can respond to a higher range of vibrations. I suppose with any planet there is both a higher range and a lower range. With any planet there is both a higher and lower range of vibration. I'm trying to be quite careful. That blue screen is kind of a shot across my bow, a bit of a warning, you know. I may have pressed too many buttons at the same time. Too much simultaneity and not enough Saturnian sequentiality, so I'm proceeding here cautiously, responding to a higher range of vibrations than would otherwise be possible. Herein also lies the distinction between the sacred and the non-sacred planets. The lords of the planets, the ray lives or planetary logoi, are also on their own level unequally developed. Now that has to be said of any category of cosmic being. Men are unequally developed. Solar angels probably are. Planetary logoi are. Solar logoi are. Cosmic logoi are. Ones about whom naught may be said are. I'm making a big jump. Galactic logoi are. How far can we go with that? So, sacred and non-sacred planets are probably, you know, unevenly developed in terms of their lords. And some of them are further advanced upon the cosmic path of spiritual unfoldment than are others. Those who are definitely upon the cosmic path of discipleship, not just of aspiration, are regarded as informing sacred planets. Those, what are they? Lords. Lords of planetary logoi, who are definitely upon the, no, of planetary schemes. That's what it should be. Who are definitely upon the cosmic path of discipleship are regarded as informing sacred planets, whilst those who are on the cosmic probationary path are expressing themselves through non-sacred planets. So, Earth, Mars, Pluto, and two planets veiled by the Sun and the Moon. The names of them have not been given, and some maybe do offer some speculation here. So, we Earth beings are on the in our planetary scheme. The Lord of our planetary scheme is on the cosmic probationary path. He has taken, we have been told, only the first cosmic initiation, the Logos of Earth. Has taken only the first cosmic initiation. The second cosmic initiation lies before him. He's taken a number of other somewhat lesser initiations. He's taking a fourth of these lesser initiations. Has Vulcan, well, let's look at Venus. Looks like Venus may have taken a second or perhaps third cosmic initiation. But if the cosmic initiations are of the same variety for sacred planetary logoi as they are for solar logoi, which I don't think is the case, then we would have a discrepancy, because even our solar logos has only taken the second of the cosmic initiations offered to a solar logos. He has to take the third. So I don't think we can think of Venus, who is still a planetary logos and a dragon of wisdom, as equally developed with our solar logos, even though they all begin, the secret doctrine tells us, in a cometary manner, as comets. So anyway, we can't figure out all the intricacies here, but the sacred, are definitely on the cosmic path of discipleship. Now, if the analogy holds good, are they on the cosmic path of initiation? Are they true cosmic initiates? Maybe not. Because if the analogy holds good, a disciple is operative basically from the first to the third initiation, at which time he becomes an initiate. So maybe these sacred planets, particularly Mercury, Venus, Vulcan, Jupiter, perhaps they are on the cosmic path of discipleship, but not yet the cosmic path of initiation. Perhaps they are not yet cosmic initiates of the third degree, the way our sun, Soto Logos, is attempting to be. After all, many of these planets, I suppose, are on the path of becoming solar logoi. They are on their way to becoming solar logoi. It's possible to transfer from the third way of higher evolution onto the sixth, I would say, and in the future will be solar logoi, whether alone or together. That's one of those interesting things. Do a group of planetary logoi become, in a way, one solar logos? That's an interesting idea. Is our present solar logos somehow a composite of the combined consciousnesses and powers of a group of planetary logoi? See, to what extent are the great beings composite beings? And, it's something that has to be thought through quite carefully. We do know that a planetary logos is the objective of a certain category of solar angels, but in groups. And that's the hint. If a certain group of solar angels can become a planetary logos, then why should not a certain group of planetary logoi become a solar logos, and a certain group of solar logoi become a cosmic logos, and a certain group of cosmic logoi become a supercosmic logos, a one about whom naught may be said in our terminology, and so forth. This is the idea of the many becoming the one. And yet, there is no fragmentation of the greater entity which the many become. It is still, I would say, one being with a unified consciousness, though embracing certain qualities offered by each one of its constituent parts. Anyway, this is a theory. So our Earth and other of the non-sacred planets are upon the cosmic probationary path, and maybe they will reach the path of cosmic discipleship when they take the second degree. they will be confirmed on that path, and maybe they will reach the path of being the cosmic initiate, the true, rather than being a probationary cosmic initiate of the first or second degree. Maybe they will be true cosmic initiates of the third degree. I suppose from this point of view, our Sola Logos is a probationary cosmic initiate. Our Sola Logos must be on the cosmic path of discipleship appropriate for Sola Logoi, and will become like Sirius, a true cosmic initiate, when it takes the third cosmic initiation looming before it, to be taken in this solar system. In this solar system, since the fourth degree is almost certainly to be taken in this solar system, with the chance of taking the fifth. You know how it is for human beings, they might, if they do well, achieve a certain initiation in their particular incarnation. Or they might have to defer that initiation for a later time in their next next incarnation. And so it could be for Sola Logoi and Planetary Logoi, but whatever happens to any one of them affects the larger being in whom they live and move and have their being. So when a disciple fails to take the initiation that lies before him, the ashram itself is affected. So, those who are upon the cosmic probationary path, are expressing themselves through non-sacred planets. This point I shall later elaborate when we come to that part of this section in this treatise, which is intended to deal with this matter. He's being very specific here. The point I seek to make here is that it is all a question of developed reception and sensitivity. This is really his main point. Become more sensitive, and then be capable of receiving the energies of greater beings, and especially the higher vibratory range of such beings. The more we have vehicles which are represented by atomic matter rather than by lesser types of matter, of the lesser subplanes, the greater will be our receptivity of the higher ranges of energy from the various, let us say, sacred planets and synthesizing planets and also undiscovered planets, some of which I suppose will be sacred, some of which will be non-sacred. The full structure of our solar system is far from revealed. A few pioneering astrologers, psychics, mathematicians, like Charles Jane, he was an astrologer of that type, were able to speculate upon the nature of certain undiscovered planets and how their energies might be accessed, and even if orbits could be determined, when such energies could be accessed. But of course, it's still very much in the realm of speculation, and even if such planets are properly identified, finding what their orbit might be, and hence when they would effectively enter various signs and so forth, is a monumentally difficult task. To simply posit a circular orbit seems to court error, because we understand much about the elliptical orbits of the planets that we are dealing with, and some orbits are very eccentric indeed. Eccentric, quite elliptical. Well, you know, maybe you can sense that I'm speaking in a somewhat different tone of voice than I did in the immediately preceding, suddenly truncated program. It will be a question of suspense as to whether there is actually a registration of material on that program. The material actually is registered, I know that, but whether all will be able to play it, especially those on Macs and so forth, depends on whether a conversion process can occur, and that is still uncertain. So I still feel as if we're in the early days of the telephone, when you pretty well had to shout into the instrument in order to make a quite ugly tone, which didn't represent your voice at all. But we're doing what we can to think the Tibetans' thoughts more deeply into the consciousness of humanity, make them digestible, assimilable, applicable, practical. That's the objective. Upon the reverse wheel, through the medium of the planetary rulers, orthodox, esoteric, and esoteric, unitedly active, that's so important, isn't it? Because he is pointing out here that you don't drop the orthodox rulers when they are subsumed by the esoteric rulers. Maybe you get a higher response from them, in fact, maybe. You don't just orthodox and esoteric, unitedly active. Should we say the exoteric ruler will always be a subset of the esoteric ruler. And our powers of combination will have to come in to discover what that will be. If we're in Aries, when Mercury is relevant, Mars does not become irrelevant, but becomes a subset of Mercury and perhaps some of the higher vibrations associated with Mars can be assimilated. Okay, upon the reverse wheel, through the medium of the planetary rulers, orthodox and esoteric, unitedly active, he's not really mentioning hierarchical yet, until the man is truly an initiate and I think can think in wholes. The man upon the path finds himself responsive to a very wide number of energies, even though he may not be fully conscious of his ability to respond. I want to say that, though he may not be fully conscious of his ability to respond. He may not know really what he's receiving, even though he's actually responsive. Coming to him from many angles and directions, and perhaps there's a certain literality about this idea of angles and directions, because we're told that, you know, crosses are crossed energies in space. It seems quite geometrical, not vague or abstract. And hence the difficulties of the man upon the path of discipleship. We can say here, oversensitivity, perhaps. Sensitivity. Oh, why not spell? Or undue responsiveness. Now, when he becomes an initiate, this range of vibrations is rapidly increased. There's some sort of asymptotic curve rising rapidly to chart the ascent of an initiate over that of a disciple and a disciple over that of an aspirant. Increased sensitivity, hard to bear, all of these different forces. When he becomes an initiate, the range of vibrations is rapidly increased and he becomes receptive to those energies which we have tabulated under the term hierarchicalness, so important. Oh, I'd like to show this to some of my friends who think that the hierarchical planets simply represent mental rulers, because unless you are initiate, this just can't be so. This is 268. So I tend to want to take a moment out here. This is esoteric astrology. 268, hierarchical rulers. Response only comes on for the initiate. Well, I want to say that because sometimes you lose a valuable reference. You can spend your life looking for it. Not reference forgot, but reference not found. And there the confirmation of the Tibetan's words rests undetected. So, hierarchical rulers, response comes only for the initiate. And maybe if I do this again, I will say response to hierarchical rulers only comes for the initiate. I like to do them in more than one way. I'd like a lot of people to have my AAB extracts, which I've been collecting for many, many years. It's not in any beautiful form, but some of the most, what I consider to be the most important statements, are collected there and serve as a confirmation when there are many doubts prevalent. So here we go. And I'd like to come down to number EAA 85, 84, end of Libra. Seem to have lost my way here. And we're in Virgo. Seems like some sort of Saturnian aspect is operating, which has slowed me down just a little bit, unfortunately. I'm trying to find the exact space where we are now. And this, please bear with me, getting closer now. So here we are. And I'm hoping that this is in fact the right one. This is the right one. The other one I'll just get rid of. Okay. We'll just delete that. So this is the correct one. The possibility of undue sensitivity increasingly exists for the initiate, but then they have the willpower and the fortitude to deal, and the diversified intelligence to deal with this range of vibrations. So the energies which we have termed hierarchical, and which have reference to the 12 creative hierarchies, concern the type of receptivity experienced by the initiate and not by anyone really before. And by this I assume we're dealing with the third degree when we talk really of the initiate. The forces of these hierarchies, neither planetary nor systemic, though I would say having something to do, you know, though related to the second tier of petals of the solar logos, I want to say that, though related to the second tier of petals of the solar logos, then sweep into and through the initiate and awaken those major group responses which eventually give him systemic consciousness and make him a world server in Aquarius and a world savior in Pisces. So we're talking here about a kind of consciousness which extends into the solar system that the true Aquarian server, with his growing universality of consciousness and the pervasive wisdom of the Piscean Savior, this implies a very extensive consciousness for the world server, true world server, and the world savior. Solar in nature and extending into the solar system, beyond the planetary. So the energies of the creative hierarchies, which are neither planetary nor systemic, but are energies from groups of monads of different degrees of development, and which are also operative throughout the solar system, I believe. They're neither specifically planetary nor specifically systemic. I wonder if they have some cosmic origin. They're certainly operative throughout the solar system, as far as I can judge. Then they sweep into and through the initiate. And this is important, because an initiate responds to wholes and to groups. And these hierarchies awaken those major group responses, which eventually give him systemic consciousness and make of him a world server in Aquarius and a world savior in Pisces. And so we might be asking here, can a person be a world server in Aquarius or a world savior in Pisces without some form of systemic consciousness? I mean, when you start on that track that's called solar initiations at the third degree, I suppose you are developing a degree of transplanetary consciousness. But there's so much to our planet anyway that I wonder if we don't have to wait till the seventh degree to have full planetary consciousness, when the Lord of the world, or rather, when the planetary logos himself is the officiant, or the hierarch, the hierophant at that initiation. Already, though, by that time, we are having certainly some degree of systemic consciousness, as the Christ himself can be inferred to have. A hint is here conveyed to you anent the world period into which we are now entering. Now, in this case, a world period can be a shorter period of time. It seems the world period is a generic form of words. Yes, world period can suggest all kinds of cycles, because you kind of wonder whether, in this case, a world period is associated with an astrological age, maybe a processional age, relatively shorter, or a longer processional age consisting of 12 processional periods, a Platonic year. So this term, world period, upon which a search should be done, is really variously used. And that's one of the methods of blinding, isn't it? When a teacher uses the same term to mean different things. Because we were talking about world periods during which there were 8 signs of the zodiac, 10, 11, 12, and so forth. But this would be a much shorter period of time, even if it's 25,000 years. So when one wants to look at a highly blinded term, one has to search throughout the books using the CD-ROM for that form of words and see the context in which that form of words appears. Then we should begin to get an idea of the different ways in which this term world period is used. I mean, it's very hard to form a conclusion concerning what is said when we're uncertain as to the cyclic duration of what is called a world period. So a hint is here conveyed to you anent the world period into which we are now entering, and it will be increasingly apparent to you, if you reflect upon my words, that we are progressing into a sign wherein the ranks of initiates will be greatly augmented. Well, it is a group sign, and the general good that is available is widely distributed to all. So we could say hierarchical influence will be widely distributed to all, and they will rise accordingly towards the possibility of initiation. And I wonder what he'll say when we're entering the age of Capricorn. So, a world period and sign seem to be somewhat equated. World period and sign seem somewhat equated in this context. CCX, yes, context. In the stage of initiation, the energies of the signs and their a constellation, shall I say, shall I say attendant constellations? That's very interesting. It expresses the, more accurately, the usual mode than the usual mode of saying it. The signs and their constellations are the attendants superior? I discussed that earlier. Are the attendants superior? Watchful, onlooking, ready to augment. So we have, it's sometimes said, constellations and their attendant planets. In this case, the attendants seem to be inferior. Here we're talking about signs and their attendant constellations, making the attendants, or those who attend, superior, because definitely a constellation is superior to the aggregation of forces brought together to concentrate the influences of a constellation. It helps us to know, as we study, where the different beings are placed within the hierarchy of being. So when I pause to say, is this being greater than that being, what it does is help us get a picture of the relative strength and position of these various beings. And that will clarify the structure of the hierarchy that we may be dealing with. Shall I say attendant constellations, he says? It expresses the situation more accurately than the usual mode of saying it. The energies of the signs and their constellations, and where's the possessive here? It should be the constellations and their signs, in a way. The constellations possess the signs more than the signs possessing the constellations. Well, anyway, these energies come through in a purer form and in a more direct line than upon the path of discipleship and the earlier stages of evolutionary development. Okay, friends, we're just at that point. And so far, holding my breath, there has been no collapse of this particular program. So this is end Esoteric Astrology 86. We've had to jump because 85 was truncated. EAA 86A. And we're in page 269. I'll have to find the place where truncation actually occurred for 85. And we begin Esoteric Astrology Adventure 86, Section B, page 269. Okay.